Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time Eagles fan, part-time Seahawks fan.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that seldom misses an awards-themed broadcast, especially when that broadcast is the Super Bowl of movie land known as the Academy Awards. Last week, the near 10,000 members of the Motion Picture Academy voted to nominate the best cinematic efforts of 2025. And fittingly, the three of us will be running down the list of nominees in the categories that interest us the most, sharing with you and with each other what we think are the best and worst of the MPA's choices. Before that, however, we're going to discuss The Testament of Anne Lee, a film directed by Mona Fastvold, best known to this point as the co-writer and co-producer of Brady Corbet's 2025 Best Picture nominee, The Brutalist. Let's begin by turning the clock back to the 18th century. It was then, specifically in 1774, that the English-born religious leader Anne Lee, known to her followers as Mother Anne Lee, immigrated to America. Having established the religious movement that came to be known as the Shakers, so-called because of the dancing and shaking Lee and her followers did to cast off sin, Lee settled in upstate New York and attempted there, with attendant struggles, to spread the word of God as she believed it. Fueled by strong visuals and a powerful lead performance by Amanda Seyfried, aided by Lewis Pullman as Lee's brother, The Testament of Anne Lee is an example of a movie that is better made than ultimately realized, even if the Motion Picture Academy snubbed it by not nominating it in any category whatsoever. That's a bit of a surprise, even though, as directed by Mona Fastvold and co-written by her and the brutalist director Brady Corbet, the film doesn't so much come to a climax as it simply ends.
Yeah, and this is certainly in conversation with themes from The Brutalist about people coming to America to escape persecution, only to find a different form of persecution here. When I heard this movie, The Testament of Anne Lee, described while it was premiering at film festivals last year, it sounded a lot more esoteric and tonally audacious and maybe even kind of disastrous than what it ends up being. Dan, you didn't bring up the fact that this movie has moments where the characters break out into song. But beyond those scenes, I felt like this was a relatively straightforward portrait of this moment in history and of this religious movement. And I know that some people and some critics are really responding to those musical moments in The Testament of Anne Lee. But those are the parts actually that didn't really work for me. And I'm not talking about the scenes where the Shakers are, well, shaking, I guess, where they're kind of moving around in religious ecstasy, because I thought those scenes were really beautifully choreographed and had this hypnotic quality to them, almost primal, as these people are crammed in these rooms and they're sort of snaking around each other and becoming a single unit through this
kind
of ecstasy.
Or even the ones in which they're out in the forest doing the same thing.
Yeah, right, yeah. But I'm talking about the scenes where in the middle of the story, the characters literally do start singing.
Yeah.
And I just didn't really like the songs, and I thought they ground the movie to a halt. Similarly to The Brutalist, I think that you're totally right about the formal splendor of this movie. I think it kind of suffocates the emotional pull of the story. I didn't think the ending was abrupt like you did. I mean, I saw it as a cradle-to-the-grave biography in a lot of ways, and so when Anne Lee eventually dies, the movie goes with her. But it still felt like there was something missing in between a lot of these scenes. It jumps ahead in history quite a few times. And oftentimes I felt like the stuff I wanted to know most was within those ellipses. So I come away from this, again, just like The Brutalist, same writing and directing team with The Testament of Anne Lee. I walk away being very impressed by the filmmaking and just kind of feeling sort of hollow about the whole thing.
Nathan, I agree totally with your assessment. I am surprised that there was not a little bit more love for Amanda Seyfried for her performance here. You know, she was pretty much overlooked in the whole award season. We did happen to see an interview, a discussion with her and the director at the Palm Springs International Film Festival. And we didn't really get a whole lot more insight into what the filmmaker was trying to achieve from that conversation. And it could have been the way that it was conducted and so forth. But unlike some of the other discussions we've seen at film festivals and at the Palm Springs Film Festival this year, this one just kind of fell flat. So I still am a little puzzled by if this was supposed to be a big, you know, musical extravaganza. Is it supposed to be a biopic? Is it supposed to be a historical, you know, moment in time? I don't know what she was going for, but the pieces ultimately in the testament of Ann Lee, to my way of thinking, don't come together. And I really ended up not liking this film, I think, for that reason.
I make the point, and Nathan, you followed up by saying I thought that the film was better made than realized, and because I don't know what she was trying to realize. You know, ultimately, is it just as simply a portrait of this woman? There wasn't enough there for me. I mean, what was the point of everything? What influence did she have? I mean, the Shakers have gone on. You know, you have Shaker furniture. There's a lot of other stuff that could have been said.
Well, I'm always curious, like, to get behind the movement. Okay, if you're going to have a movement that focuses on celibacy, did you figure out maybe it was not going to be long-lasting? yeah, I needed a little bit more of some of the backstory or the context. And then, you know, so, like I said, how do the musical dance choreography interludes fit with that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, there were two things that I wanted to say about this. One is that I get the feeling that this Brady Corbet, Mona Fastvold, and by the way, they are partners in real life. Their partnership, it's like, well, we make movies the way we make them, and if you don't like it, you don't get it. You know, it's on you. That's certainly the way I felt about The Brutalist. But the other thing, we were talking about the performances. I thought Amanda Seyfried, I think she's extremely talented. I thought was terrific in this movie. But also Lewis Pullman, the son of Bill Pullman, I thought he was really good,
Boy,
too.
He looks more and more like Bill.
Doesn't he?
That.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I want to defend The Testament of Ann Lee a little bit because I wasn't totally down on it. I was absorbed in it for long stretches. In terms of its portrait of this religion or religious movement, however you want to define it, I did find it sort of unexpected and thought-provoking because I think the movie is less concerned with the doctrine of the Shakers. Certainly it gets into it, but I think it's more concerned with how they responded to the culture around them. And it really doesn't make a value judgment about the Shakers in general. Instead, it kind of allows you to apply your own feelings to the material, where you could walk away, you know, asking yourself, was this a positive social movement? Was it a cult? Can those things be mutually exclusive? And I also think that the idea of celibacy, that certainly stems from the opening part of the movie where we see her going through all of these terrible pregnancies where she either has
multiple
violent
miscarriages
or her infants die, you know, within the first year of their lives. And so certainly that would have influenced it. So maybe there's a commentary there about how people that eventually go to lead religious movements are, if not forcing, then sort of applying their own life experiences to their followers.
That's a good point.
And the movie's sort of letting you figure that out. It's not looking directly down the barrel of the camera and telling
maybe
you.
Maybe I expected too much because I have always been curious. I mean, Dan mentioned the furniture and some of the memorabilia from the Shaker period and so forth. I have always been curious about their split from the quote, mainstream Quaker tradition, because we always think of Quakers as being sort of, this is my maybe bias or perspective, open-minded and inclusive and welcoming. And so then here's this group. Did they not feel as though they could express themselves
adequately?
Were
they too extreme?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, you mentioned the word cult. And I don't know if these were just people who were more rabid adherents of expressing their love for, you know, a higher power in a different way.
And the movie certainly frames it as, you know, they're not the villains of this story. It's the outsiders that don't understand them that then try and force their own beliefs onto the Shakers.
Yeah, and I want to go back and I want to go and underscore exactly what you were saying about The Testament of Ann Lee. There are parts of it that are amazingly filmed and amazingly choreographed. It is not a boring movie in any way.
No,
it just isn't exactly the great cinematic achievement that I thought it might have been.
We had some, at least Dan and I had some problems with The Brutalist. And I'm waiting for when Corbet and Fastbold put it all together, because it's going to be like, you know, a home run, a touchdown for sure. if that happens, because there's so much talent there, it just needs to be, I think, framed or structured in a different way.
And I'm sure they appreciated you applying a sports metaphor to their.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, I couldn't think of a dance metaphor.
Films.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Hey,
a plié, if you will.
Should we say slam dunk? Should I add that?
Hole in one.
With that, we have to end our discussion of The Testament of Ann Lee. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the 2026 Academy Award nominations. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The 35th annual record sale is almost here. Join Spokane Public Radio February 14th and 15th at Center Place Regional Event Center. Browse thousands of records, CDs, and equipment ready to become part of your collection. Visit Center Place in Spokane Valley from 11 to 5 both days. Proceeds from the 35th annual record sale support SPR's trusted information and arts programming. Find details at SpokanePublicRadio.org.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Mona Fastbold's feature film, The Testament of Ann Lee. Since Fastbold was co-screenwriter and co-producer of the 2025 Best Picture nominee, The Brutalist, it's only natural for us to look at this year's nominees. And we're going to start off with you, Mary Pat. What do you got to say?
Well, I think we might as well begin looking at the Best Picture nominees, because I think there was at least one surprise to my way of thinking on this list. But I felt partially vindicated because four of my Best Picture selections for 2025 got nominations, and then three on my second list got nominations. So,
well, kudos to you.
Yeah, this time. And I also knew that Hamnet and One Battle After Another, which were not on my list, would certainly be, you know, receive a nomination. But I think the surprises on this list, certainly F1. I mean, where did that come from? I enjoyed the movie, but Best Picture?
And I wanted to talk about surprises anymore, because there are so many precursor awards that by the time the actual nominations come out, it's very rare that there was a surprise. F1, I mean, I don't think it belongs in the 10 best pictures of the year, obviously, but it did get a nomination with the Producers Guild of America. So the fact that it showed up here was not a huge surprise to me, but it a head scratcher. Like, okay. I expected it to show up in some of the technical categories, which it did.
Oh, of course.
But that F1 slot, I think that's a pun with car racing, could have gone to a lot of other things.
All right. So there's why is F1 on there? Flip side of that is Sinners gets 16 nominations.
An all-time
the
record.
Most of any in history.
Yeah. You weren't a fan.
Come on. No. Well, but yeah. But even if I were a fan, I would still go, what? Seriously.
Well, I mean, it cleaned up in all the technical nominations or all the technical categories. I don't have any quibbles with those.
Loved Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah. So it wasn't a huge surprise to me, but 16 is a lot. I mean,
no kidding. 14
was the previous record. Mm-hmm. I think it's Titanic, La La Land, and All About Eve. So it's in very rarefied company.
I was a little surprised by The Secret Agent. Again, a lot of love for that particular film. But, you know, we had talked before about No Other Choice. And Nathan, you were a big fan of that. It was just an accident. The Panahi film, which also didn't get him a Best Director nomination.
He got a Best Original Screenplay
nomination
for that.
I was glad to see Train Dreams on there. You know, not that it is the best film of the year. I certainly don't think it's going to win. But giving some attention to a regionally made movie,
yeah.
I thought it was a beautiful film.
And I thought Joel Edgerton might have been overlooked in the acting category. But what about No Other Choice? You were a big fan. And did you think it would show up here in
somewhere so,
more prominently?
The Park Chan-wook film No Other Choice, which we just reviewed, I thought would have at least showed up in Best International Film. I thought that Park had a really good chance of getting a director or a screenplay nomination. And it seems like every year there is a film not in the English language that the Academy just flips for. This year it was Sentimental Value that got in 4 Best Acting nominations.
Well, do you think he got any pushback because he had his actors work during the strike?
Yeah, so there's a bit of controversy around Park where on one of his last projects, he was actually ejected from the Writers Guild of America because he supposedly worked during one of the strikes. I do think there is something here that the Academy is almost punishing him for that. But yeah, I would have liked to see him in some categories. This is the first year in a while where the Best Actor category may be the most competitive of the 4 acting categories.
Well, let's talk about that
one
then.
Yeah, so I thought there were so many performances that got overlooked here just because there was a lot of competition. I'll read the nominees. Timothy Chalamet in Marty Supreme, Leonardo DiCaprio in One Battle After Another, Ethan Hawke in Blue Moon, Michael B. Jordan in Sinners, Wagner Moura in The Secret Agent. I would have also loved to see Jesse Plemons from Begonia.
Yeah.
Josh O'Connor had such a huge year in 2024. Would have been cool to see him recognized.
I had mentioned Joel Edgerton.
Yeah, for The Mastermind or Wake Up Dead Man, Joel Edgerton, Lee Byung-hun in No Other Choice.
What about Paul Mescal?
Well, I think Paul Mescal for
that
Hamnet.
Was supporting,
wasn't it? Well, here's the thing. So this is another issue.
Yeah, we've talked about this ad infinitum.
Yeah, where I think he was campaigned for supporting actor. Mm-hmm. You could argue that he's the co-lead with Jesse Buckley, who's up for Best Lead Actress. Again, I just think that the competition this year was just so stiff
fierce.
That he didn't make it in there. But I think he's been better in other movies. Let's just say that.
I thought the Best Actress in a Supporting Role category, not that they're undeserved, but I was surprised Elle Fanning in Sentimental Value, Inga Ibsdotter Lias for Sentimental Value, Amy Madigan, of course, for Weapons, and Wonmu Masaku for Sinners, Tiana Taylor, One Battle After Another. So I was a little surprised by the Elle Fanning nomination, but anybody else you would have put in there?
I actually really like this category. I'm, of course, gunning for Amy Madigan for Weapons. I love
course.
When they recognize wacko performances like that. I'm sort of surprised that Gwyneth Paltrow in Marty Supreme didn't end up here. Maybe that was another instance where some people thought she was lead, some people thought she was supporting. I thought she was really good. She has an Oscar, so sometimes gives you a leg up. But other than that, I think this is a really good category. I also want to call out supporting actor, which I think is also very strong and has what I think is the one big surprise of
go
the acting
nominations. Read those off.
So we have Benicio Del Toro and Sean Penn for One Battle After Another, Jacob Elordi for Frankenstein, Stellan Skarsgård for Sentimental Value. And I was thrilled that this 5th nominee was in there. Delroy Lindo for
Well,
because
he missed out on The Five Bloods.
Yes.
He should have gotten a nomination for that.
And so the reason this is a surprise and something like another big surprise for some was Kate Hudson being nominated for Best Actress for Song Sung Blue. But she got a SAG nomination, so it wasn't totally out
of
left
field. Well, and also,
field.
I did not like that film, but I did like her performance.
But Delroy Lindo hasn't shown up in any of those precursors. He didn't show up at SAG. He didn't get a BAFTA. He wasn't at the Golden Globes. Miles Caton, who's the kind of aspiring young blues guitarist in Sinners, got in at SAG, so he could have ended up here. But I'm thrilled that Delroy Lindo wound up here because he's been so great for so long. And as you mentioned, he absolutely should have been nominated for Best Actor in Spike Lee's The Five Bloods a few years back.
So if we were going to look at some of the other categories, like director, what about that?
So we have Chloe Zhao for Hamnet, Josh Safdie for Marty Supreme, Paul Thomas Anderson for One Battle After Another, Joachim Trier for Sentimental Value, and Ryan Coogler for Sinners. Again, I think that's a pretty typical
list.
It's
solid. I was surprised about the Trier nomination a little bit.
But again, that's what I was
options.
Saying, how they often will just go all in on one foreign film, and this year it was Sentimental Value. Again, I think Trier is a really interesting filmmaker. I was happy to see him here.
Of course, I need to give a shout out to my favorite category is always Best Documentary Feature. And there were some good ones this year. There were some hard ones. So the Alabama Solution about mass incarceration in Alabama, Inside Footage, amazing access and really one of the most depressing movies you could ever see. Come See Me in the Good Light, you know, a film about the denouement of the poet Andrea Gibson's life. Cutting Through Rocks, don't know anything about it. It's not available. Hopefully it will be. Mr. Nobody Against Putin, should definitely see that because it's really kind of a horror film about what's happening in Russia. So what about foreign or international film it's called now? Of course, I was thrilled to see the voice of Hind Rajab get in there because that was probably the most compelling film I've seen in the last year.
Yeah, and you also have The Secret Agent, It Was Just an Accident, Sentimental Value, and Surratt. That last one hasn't been released here yet, but I'm really excited for it. You know, the only major category we haven't called out in the last few seconds we have here, I want to call it out, is Best Lead Actress. We've alluded to it a little bit. You have Jessie Buckley in Hamnet, Kate Hudson in Song Sung Blue, we mentioned, Renata Rensva again in Sentimental Value, your favorite, Emma Stone in Begonia, and I'm thrilled this one is in here.
I agree.
Rose Byrne in If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. Now, we have not reviewed that because Dan can't get through this movie.
No, no.
He had to stop
through,
it halfway through.
It
but yeah, let me tell you, if you have a high tolerance for anxiety, Rose Byrne's performance in this movie might be my favorite of the year. So check it out. I'm thrilled that she got recognized for that.
I'm not going to end this without talking about best casting because, first of all, I think that's a stupid category. but second of all, if you're going to have that category, how do you not nominate Sentimental Value, in which the four principal characters all get nominations?
I'd like to give a shout out to Aoife, too.
Yes.
A movie that we all loved, a small movie with these sort of offbeat kind of characters.
Man, so many small movies never get Oscar recognition, but yes, check out
Aoife. Now,
movie. That should have been nominated for Best Casting.
Yes, exactly.
That's what I said. That's what I meant.
Yep. Kudos to you, MP, again. That was our discussion about and reaction to the 2026 Oscar nominations, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed Mona Fassbender's feature film, The Testament of Anne Lee. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bratt for directing the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from Spokane's own Jess Walter from his novel Beautiful Ruins. Weren't movies his generation's faith anyway, its true religion? Wasn't the theater our temple, the one place we enter separately but emerge from 2 hours later together with the same experience, same guided emotions, same moral? You're listening to Movies 101 at Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.